Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass, the podcast which is going to take you behind the scenes of the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass, as well as the automotive social media scene. That's actually the second time I've messed that intro line up. I'm doing well, aren't I? You join me, your host Sam, from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass, as well as Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales. We are here at Gravelwood on your mezzanine level, overlooking some of the stunning cars you have currently for sale, including my old Abarth 695 Proposto.
It's back. Yeah.
Long-term viewers of my main channel, Seen Through Glass, may remember the little banana beast that I owned last year. One of my favorite cars I've ever owned. It's a go-kart. It's a hilarious car that makes no sense to anyone, but does exist.
Do you want to buy it back?
I'm actually half tempted, like no jokes. So Tony sold the car for me last year to a very nice man in Scotland. And literally out of nowhere, the other day, suddenly posted on Instagram, look what's back. You didn't even text me. You put it on your Insta stories before texting me.
Well,
to say
because I know
the Abarth's
you watch
back.
Him, mate. I haven't got time to keep texting you. I'm busy, mate.
Well, speaking of your Instagram stories, ladies and gentlemen, Tony from Gravelwood is very close to 50,000 followers on his Gravelwood Instagram page. Let's try and get him there. So if you don't follow Tony already on Instagram, please head over and check out his page now. Give it a follow. All the cars that are for sale here at Gravel get listed, as well as a lot of the pictures from Tony's various adventures.
Too many.
I'm always I keep texting saying, are you actually selling any cars at the moment, or are you on another
track? I do
track
more
day?
Adventures than you, and it's your job.
You do. It's quite terrifying. You can also get a lot of great exclusive views of Tony singing along to the radio in his various cars.
No, I don't do that as much anymore.
Oh my god, they were my highlight when I used to wake up on a Saturday or Sunday morning and you'd be there going, a prayer.
It's the old 80s songs. They always get me.
Yeah, they get you going.
Or the Kistry songs.
What?
The Kistry songs.
I said kiss you. I was like, chill out, mate. It's been a while, but not that happy to see you.
We haven't seen you for a while.
We haven't because I've been on holiday. This is something I kept secret from the world of social media. I took 2 weeks off and went to Bali, Indonesia. Again, if you don't know, long-term viewers will know this, but if you don't know, I spent a lot of time in Indonesia. My parents are sort of true hippies and went there for the first time in the 70s. And we've been going a lot. I'm very spoiled. We've been going a lot since I was a kid. And it's a kind of like runaway location.
It's a beautiful place, right?
It's amazing. It has changed. I mean, it's unrecognizable from the place that I went as a kid. God knows what it's like for my dad. As I say, he went there in the mid-70s for the first time. The rate of development and the sort of... I can remember vividly a time when I went and you couldn't eat anything but local food. Like if you had salad, it was food poisoning. You couldn't get beef, really.
What did you eat then?
Sort of, it's a lot of rice. It's good. Like it's good. It's weird.
And chicken.
Chicken satay.
Yeah.
You ever heard of something called nasi goreng?
No.
Okay. It's just like fried rice.
But I'm glad you explained it, because probably a lot of people wouldn't have known either.
Well, nasi means rice, goreng means fried. Selamat pagi, good morning. I can actually speak a lot of Balinese.
Can you?
Yeah, I took my girlfriend to Bali for the first time this year, and she was like, why on earth can you speak so much of this language? Like, well, I've been coming here for 20 years. I'm just moving my microphone, sorry. I was there for 2 weeks, hiding, pretending that
resting,
I wasn't.
Resting, mate.
Resting, that's exactly it. I felt like I needed some rest. It's been a full-on first 6 months of the year, hasn't it? For both of us.
Yeah.
We've done a lot.
We have done a lot. Ireland, Where else have we been?
Ireland. Where else have we done?
Lots of separate stuff.
But I feel like we've done lots of separate stuff. You've been busy selling cars and I've been busy making videos. So no,
I haven't
nice
been busy selling cars, but I've been busy travelling.
Yes. Maybe you should have been selling cars.
Yeah.
So yes, anyway, here we are on the mezzanine overlooking my bath and also overlooking your recently wrapped 911 GT3 RS.
The pig.
The pink pig now. Yep. So how did this come about? Because I haven't actually seen the car in the flesh until now.
So originally, when I bought the car, when we were speccing it, I remember texting you and Paul and thinking, I'm in a bit of a dilemma. I don't know what colour to spec the car. And there's only 7 or 8 colours, Porsche, anyway. So I thought, I know, I'll spec it in a neutral colour, like a Stealth, which is what I've done.
Black.
And if I want to change the colour, I'll wrap it.
I remember that always being the plan.
The plan, exactly. And then I remember having a conversation with you originally.
Hello. Now I get my credit.
And said, you'll get a bit of credit.
Two months later, after you wrap the car and reveal it with Archie. Cheers.
You was on holiday.
I know, I was on holiday. So, go on, please.
And you suggested to me that
this was in Ireland. This was during the Irish trip, and you were starting to think about wrapping it because... You just said,
no,
oh,
it was before, mate. Originally, it was before. You said, wrap it in a cool livery. And originally, you said to me, wrap it in pink. But you were quite vague.
I said, the Le Mans
are.
Pink. I wasn't vague. You just didn't know what I was talking about. I showed you a picture. It what? Was just after they had released the Le Mans 911 RSR liveries, which was the
and that
pink
was in
pig,
Ireland. You're
and then
right.
The other one was the Rothmans version.
But that went over my head
completely. You had no idea what I was talking about. I want pink. Yeah.
And then I remember seeing a picture of it, and I sent it to you. I'm going to wrap it, and you said, "Yeah, that's what I was talking
about."
That's
what I talked about so many times ago. No, no. I couldn't believe it. I was like, "God, Tony, you're such a genius! What a brilliant idea!"
It was my idea. It was actually his idea. So thank you for that.
No, that's no problem. It looks fantastic.
The execution
was
perfecto.
Perfected by
Dub Customs.
The lovely Dub Customs, smashing live as usual.
They done so well because it was such a big job.
I have to say, it's very intricate.
The colour match is almost perfect. You can't get the colour on a wrap. So what they had to do, they had to laminate the colour on a wrap and then put it on the car. So that's not an actual Avery
cut.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's
and then
sick.
Obviously the stickers and all the red stripes are all copied. And it looks as good as what I've seen copy on any other Rothmans or Martini or anything. The attention it gets is next level.
So this came around because, as I say, we I'm going to give you some credit now.
No, we's fine. No
got
problem.
The idea more from for this year's Le Mans 911 RSR, but that was a tribute to the 917, isn't it? The 917.
Okay, so it's a really cool story.
Okay, go on.
And I know the story.
Oh, please.
Thanks to Archie's dad.
Oh, nice. He's, yeah, not Archie.
Not Archie. Yeah. Archie can't spell his name. originally, it was raced on the 917 in the 1971. It was running fifth in LMP1 and it retired, so it didn't finish. They then retired the livery and then bring it back this year in GT2 on the
not
RSR.
Okay, this is where Archie's dad got it wrong.
Okay.
GT2 doesn't exist anymore.
Okay.
That's an old class.
No,
so
that was
GT,
Archie that
GTE
said
Pro. Yeah, I had a go at him in my video the other day.
Right.
GTE Pro.
Right.
So GT2 was an old class probably when Archie was racing, so that's maybe why he was doing it, but it's GTE Pro.
Fine.
That they were doing it.
Okay, so basically RSR.
Yeah, yeah, the RSR.
Yeah,
that,
the that's RSR. What they put so they bring it back, and it won, obviously.
Sick!
So, obviously that wrap has been done before. I've seen it on 911s in America, but it's not relative.
And I'd say not as well.
No.
Not as well as this. This
no,
is
no, no.
spot on to the Absolutely. Racing wrap, which Dub Customs, I mean, massive.
Yeah, yeah.
To Dub, because they've absolutely smashed it. But it's also brilliant because the RSR fundamentally is a really beefed up, incredible looking version of the GT3 RS.
Correct.
So, you can translate it better. Previously, when it was on other generations, it
just
didn't
quite
make sense.
Well,
yeah, it didn't
sure.
wear it as well. But now this is very much tailored to be on that car.
Yeah.
And it honestly, could be the Le Mans RSR.
Absolutely.
If you didn't know, it's so spot on. Yeah. And the RSR does look a bit like a GT3 RS.
Correct.
I think it's brilliant. I think it's the best thing you've done on a car ever.
Agreed. And as well, because I've been doing some track days recently, as some of you know.
Tony Schumacher gravel.
there's rubber and tyre marks on the wrap.
Sick.
That actually, like, I'm never going to wash it, mate. It looks insane.
It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. Talk to me a bit more about these track day things, because, you know, this year you've done, and last year, a lot of sort of big road trips. That's kind of been your thing that you've been doing a lot of. But recently, that switched to track days, and I feel like you've been doing a ton of track days. So where's this new love come from?
So we all know, you especially being experienced, I like to drive fast.
Yes. Very fast.
Very quickly. So sometimes that's not always feasible on the road. And I own three track cars, essentially. So me and Archie were speaking months and months ago about him coming to do some stuff with me. So, and he said, yeah, I'll film it and I'll teach you a bit of tuition. Perfect.
Sure.
So originally it was Anglesey. We went to Anglesey in a Purple Manti with Supercar Driver. I was on a trip and then went there. And mate, honestly, the difference Archie made to me driving was from there to there.
For listeners only, Tony's indicating the size of the Twin Tower. Oh, not the Twin Towers.
No.
Empire State Building.
Honestly, I don't really like picking people up, but I can't thank him or give him enough credit for how much of an improvement he made.
Have you had any on-track tuition before?
Yeah. Okay. So I done a bit in 488. A bit in Porsche before, not recently, but a couple of years ago, I've done track days as well. But the difference, it's half a second a corner or whatever. It's minor stuff, but mate, and it makes you enjoy it so much when you know exactly when to brake, exactly when to turn in. And I just love it. It's so good.
I'm so glad you're getting enjoyment out of it, because as you say, you do own three track-focused cars, the Huracan Performante, the GT3 RS, and the AMG GTR. Whilst they are all road cars, they are very much track-focused, so now you're using them for what they were intended. But you're also getting real enjoyment out of it, and I think it's easy to say, oh, yeah, driving on track is going to be fun. But a lot of people get intimidated by it. A lot of people don't do it well. A lot of people, you know, don't know how to execute it correctly. I agree. Credit where credit is due. Archie Hamilton, he's a fantastic tutor, because that's how I learned to drive on track. And that's how I did my ARDS test and got my National B race license. Archie Hamilton.
Yeah.
He taught us all how to pass our ARDS test, you know, because that's how we first met him. That's when he first appeared on my main channel, Seen Through Glass. He's a very good teacher in that sense.
He is very good at
Gives
teaching.
Some confidence, doesn't, you know, yell it and shout at you. And I think he's good at reading you as a driver.
Yeah.
You know, which is very important, because I've been like you to a number of track days where they give you a sort of a tutor, they say, oh, driver coach will be in there. And I haven't bonded with them, you know. I had one guy, this is quite a while ago, this must have been during Seen Through Glass, I can't remember. And he kept saying, set the car up! You're not setting the car up. What do you mean? I don't know what you mean. Set the car up in the set. And I was like, I don't. And I pulled over and I said, can you explain what you mean by set the car up? Because, well, as you get to each corner, set the car up properly. What does that mean? Because, well, you just set it up. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to punch you if you say set it up one more time. Obviously, now I know that front engine cars, you've got to set them up. You know, preload them into corners. You need a certain way. A certain explanation,
which he is very good at, and
Archie's very good at.
You've got to listen. You have to listen to him, not just Archie, as in all racing drivers. But so we've been out on track in all my cars now. They're all very different.
Mm.
So mid-engine four-wheel drive, rear engine rear-wheel drive, front mid-engine rear-wheel drive. So they all behave differently. But I know how to drive them all now.
Okay, talk to me. I'm going to ask the characteristics of each, and then I'm going to ask you to pick a favourite, even though I know the answer. So, how does the Performante behave?
So, the Performante...
Oh, if you're going to sell a car, get it.
No. This is...
I know you'd sell some. I know you can't turn that business down. It's tough in the summer here, especially when it's raining in August.
It's tough in holiday season. So
yeah, go on.
The Performante four-wheel drive, loads of grip in fast corners, but loads of understeer in slow corners.
Still loads of understeer.
Very much so. And when I was at Anglesey before Archie got there, I was frustrated because I was getting understeer out of the corners. I understand why now. So what you do with the Performante, you literally brake right into the corner.
Okay.
Like,
so do you sort of almost triangle the corner?
Yeah,
is
yeah.
Is that why, like, brake into it, turn, and then boot?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not about sweeping through the corner.
No.
It's a, yeah.
Yeah, it's okay. Not a, but yeah, it's the Porsche's a bit more of a sweeper, but the Performante to finger the understeer, hard into a corner, almost at an angle, different to what you would normally drive.
Super weird.
Super weird, but out. And okay. Then you're out, you're gone.
So doing everything in a straight line. Breaking a straight line and accelerating
everything
a straight line.
Everything in a straight line, yeah.
And turn as minimal as possible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Porsche, different again, where it's similar, but not so much of an angle.
Okay.
But you have to get the weight over the front of the car because it's rear engine.
Of course,
of course. But as soon as you off the brake, you're back on the power because your weight restrictive at the back.
Sure.
So you want the grip at the back of the car. So that's why Porsches are so fast out of corners. It's biblical compared to the other two out of corners because it
wow.
just absolutely no
mechanical
understeer.
Grip really
pure mechanical
wow.
grip. The AMG
just hold on for dear life.
You have to be very patient.
Okay.
With it,
both ends, in and out.
In and out.
Okay.
You have to wait with that car because if you're too eager coming out, you're going to lose the back end.
Spinning
because
around.
There's no weight. There's no weight over the back of the car. It's a very good car, though, mate, that AMG. When I took it to Silverstone last week, admittedly, within a week period, I'd probably done 200 laps of Silverstone, so I knew it very well.
Cash.
I was going through Maggots and Beckett's, like 130.
Oh,
and I'm doing the straights at 155s, and then stopping at the 75-metre
wow.
mark or something.
Fair play.
Yeah, yeah. So... but it was very good round the fast corners, the AMG.
In comparison to the Lambo in a straight line, how did it feel?
There is nothing in them two cars in a straight line. In a fast corner, Performante is better, I would say. However, the Porsche is just next level to both of them.
Huh.
Honestly, it is unbelievable. It's just the grip, mate. It's the grip.
It's what Porsche do best, which
oh.
is why when you go to the Nürburgring, as you did, which we're going to talk about very quickly, you see them everywhere. I mean, like, that's the home of Porsches, isn't it?
Literally,
I mean, literally every single Porsche ever made goes to the Nürburgring, which yours did too. So you woke up one morning and decided, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to drive the Nürburgring.
Very sporadically.
Yeah.
I have a group of friends that go there every year.
Okay.
A different set of friends to who I normally knock about with. But they go every year. So they went on the early hours of Friday morning. Anyway, all week he was saying, come over to Nürburgring. I said, no, I don't fancy it. Anyway, I didn't have a lot to do that weekend. Cleared it with the missus. She said, yeah, fine, you go. So I just booked a hotel, got a train and went. I was terrified. Absolutely terrified.
It's quite an experience, isn't it?
Honestly, it is a really... good experience, and it is such a cool place.
And I'm assuming this wasn't a track day, this was just the standard, what do they call them, tourist laps?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I didn't do many, I only done four or five. The first lap was honestly the worst thing I'd ever done in my life. I didn't know where I was going.
Why? What scared you?
Mate, every corner, you've been round.
Yeah.
Every corner's blind. The at any given time, there can be oil on the road. There are, sorry if I offend anyone, idiots. Pure idiots driving on the track.
Just all over the place.
That they either they think they know the track or they do know the track, but they're still driving far too fast for their capabilities.
Okay.
And I was so worried that someone was gonna bury their Fiesta into the side of my car. although I didn't, it wasn't really a Fiesta, but
and the Pontiac 458. I mean, you know, there's enough idiots out there and very nice cars
for sure. Yeah. I mean, literally, every other car was a GT3 or GT3 RS, obviously.
Do you know the lap at all? Have you played it on a computer game? Have you seen like did you have any idea?
No idea at all.
You're going in
completely blind.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
Absolutely terrifying.
What did you make out of the carousel when you came on that?
I didn't even know it was coming.
Oh God.
So anyway, I'd. They shut the track every 20 minutes.
Okay.
If it someone crashes, binned it, bikes falling off, air ambulances, all that lot.
It's nerve-wracking, isn't it?
In the little bit.
Yep.
In the mall.
The mall
in the centre.
The shopping mall.
The shopping mall.
Okay, sorry. Yeah.
In the set, right near the GP track, they have these simulators, and they are really. I'm not very good at simulators, but they are really good, and that actually helped me when I went back out. So I done that on the Sunday morning. I went back out on the Sunday afternoon.
Okay,
and that did help me.
It's familiarisation. I mean,
for sure.
I always forget, and I shouldn't as a petrolhead, how long the bloody Nürburgring is.
You can never learn it, mate.
It's. I mean, the pros do like Boosted Boris.
I met him.
He's out there. Nice guy in the world, isn't he?
Yeah, he was very busy though.
But he's done like 500 laps.
Yeah.
If not more. I mean, you know, and then they know. I think even Schmee, who's done a handful now, says that every now and again he has a bit of a blank moment.
No, he will. Yeah. And there's certain parts of the track that are really uneven. So there's a straight where you come up a crest and then there's a left and a right.
Oh, I hate that.
If
That's
you're
horrible.
On the left-hand side of the track, there's a bump you're going to crash.
Yeah.
You've got to be on the right-hand side.
There's one as well when you're going down. You get just a little bump in the sort of braking.
And then a hard braking left.
Yes. Oh, my God. That's just horrific.
Well, I took off there about 110.
Brilliant.
No, but I knew it was coming. I remembered that bit.
Okay.
So, but yeah, honestly, I was piecing together. Like I said, I only done 5 laps. I wouldn't rush back out there.
Okay, that's interesting.
It was maybe I'd go more for the atmosphere again, because it was such a cool place. Everyone was really like-minded. Everyone's a petrol head.
It's a you turn up and it is like a mecca, and there's so much going on.
I've never been anything like it.
Yeah, I agree. There's a place to be, and all the hotels are car themed.
Correct.
And restaurants have got trophies on them. It's a really great place to be.
Yeah.
I agree. It's a bit too much for me. Like,
same.
I would love to do the Grand Prix circuit, but the Nürburgring, it's an experience, but it's not somewhere that I really look to go and thrash a car. I prefer. I don't know, why it is purpose-built. But anyway, I don't know why. I'm the same as you. I think I'd freak myself out.
I'd rather stay in the UK and do a couple of track days.
Sure. Okay, perfect. So this is your new thing. I think we need to find... we need to go out, don't we? We need to go and do
a track day video. Should we do a video? Honestly, that will be so good.
Let's do it. I think we have to do it at some point.
It'll be so good.
Okay, track day video coming up once we find some...
You will not see where I've gone.
Oh my God, here he is. All the chat. Well, anyway, so that's what Tony's been up to, and that's where I've been the last couple of weeks, hence the... it's becoming a bi-weekly podcast, at best, if not a tri-weekly, isn't it?
It's so hard, though,
isn't it? It's so hard.
So
we
busy.
Keep complaining, but I promise you all, we are working incredibly hard behind the scenes to implement some new things for this podcast. We're going to focus.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
On this sort of video side, whilst I know that popularity of audio-only podcasts is growing. I've done a couple of polls recently in the last month, and it turns out that sort of something like 70% of you tune into the podcast via video, via YouTube.
Okay, it's still big on YouTube.
It's the biggest element is on YouTube. So we're working really hard to improve this. We're going to have different camera angles, some B-roll, some graphics.
Some
guests. Yes, guests is the big part of it. But as we keep liking to complain about, we are limited on time and resources doing other bits and bobs. But anyway, for today, there's a couple of topics we want to talk about, but I did actually ask a whole lot of you to suggest some topics for us to discuss. So before we move on to the main topic of today, I just want to roll through these really quickly. So let me bring this up. Talk amongst yourselves while I whilst I search this tweet, because I've lost it briefly.
Can you multitask? Because I've got a question for you.
Oh, please.
So we spoke about this off camera. I feel that you need to share this with the audience. When you was in Bali, something happened to you. Would you like
I had forgotten about this. Okay, well, I'll put these tweets down for a second.
This is hilarious.
Which not, I'll have you know, it's not actually hilarious, Tony. It's terrifying. whilst I was in Bali, there were these horrific series of earthquakes in a neighbouring island called Lombok. Unfortunately, close to 400 people lost their lives. Which is not funny at all. A really catastrophic experience and situation. And so basically, the day I arrived at midday. My dad had already been there. And as we touched down, he said that there had been a magnitude 6 earthquake in Lombok, which I say it's about 150 kilometers away, or maybe miles, from Bali. But just across a little short
sea. 2 hours, mate.
Yeah, nothing. Yeah. He said he felt it whilst he was having breakfast. It was sort of weird, but not too dramatic. And then he'd felt a small aftershock an hour or so later. But he wasn't that bothered. And I think 16 or so people unfortunately lost their lives in that first one. So still a horrible, horrible situation. But we sort of were like, okay, well, that's happened. How scary. And if you don't know, Indonesia lies in something called the Ring of Fire. The Ring of Fire, which is all these tectonic plates that move. And that's why basically it's a string of islands and they've all got volcanoes on them, because it's this sort of very intrepid, is that the right word? Area for, tectonic plates.
Because most of us in the UK wouldn't have ever experienced an earthquake. Oh, I certainly haven't.
Well, this is the thing. So it's an area that's very prone to earthquakes and volcanic eruptions and all these different things. And there's a volcano on Bali called Mount Agung that has been erupting for about a year or so now. So in the lead up to this year's trip, we've all been quite nervous about it. Not in the sense that we thought it was going to erupt onto our house, but the fact it might close down airports or we might struggle with things. So that was our concern. We weren't concerned about earthquakes, because it has been 40 odd years since a major earthquake has interfered with Bali. Yeah, the last one in Bali was in the 60s. Obviously, Indonesia's had some pretty horrific ones. The Sri Lankan tsunami, or the Southeast Asian tsunami back in 2002.
That was the big
that
one.
That was caused by an earthquake in just off Sumatra in Indonesia. So it is a very an area that is prone to these things, but not necessarily in Bali. So anyway, I'm rambling.
This is good information, mate.
Well, I'm trying.
Yeah.
We've turned into a National Geographic podcast. There's nothing to do with cars in this section.
David Attenborough's going to come out of that tree in a minute.
And slowly, Sam shut himself. So nothing. We were there for a week. Lovely. Weather was a bit off, but everyone was still having a good time. The following Sunday, so bang on a week after the first magnitude 6 earthquake, we were sitting at dinner, and my girlfriend had just arrived. And we were chatting, everyone was having a normal time, and the table started to shake. Now, last year, I experienced my first ever earthquake in Bulgaria, another place that is prone to earthquakes.
Really?
Yeah, first ever one. It happened at about 5 a.m. in the morning. It was a magnitude.
Europe?
Yeah. They do have them in Europe quite a lot. Italy, Spain, I think. France have a few earthquakes every now and again. But very, very small. And this one was the same. It was in Bulgaria. It was magnitude 4, about 5 a.m. in the morning. And I felt like someone was like just shaking my bed as in like, wake up. And I rolled over and I said to my girl, why are you shaking the bed? She goes, and she was fast asleep. And I woke up and she was like, it's an earthquake. So it was a very weird feeling. It, as I say, that one just felt like someone was just sort of shaking the bed. So we're sitting at the table and I feel this on the table, and for some reason, something in me immediately knew it was an earthquake. I can't tell
you
why. You'd
experienced it before, so.
I guess that's what it was. It's such a bizarre feeling that I immediately knew that's what it was. So I shouted, that's an earthquake, that's an earthquake, that's an earthquake. And everyone looked at me like I was mad.
What, flapping?
Mate.
This is the funny
flapping.
Bit.
Flapping. Still not that funny, Tony, but I'm glad you're laughing. So It starts off with a very gentle rumble on the table, and it slowly starts to increase and increase. I can't think of many ways to describe the experience of an earthquake. If you haven't been through one, it's so discombobulating and so foreign to anything you've ever experienced before. That essentially, this ended up rising to what was originally a 7.1 magnitude that then dropped to a 6.9 after the various research. But this is a major, major earthquake. And it ramped up and it ramped up and it ramped up to the point where, firstly, I didn't trust the infrastructure of a Bali household. So I said, I don't want to stand in the house. I don't think the walls are going to withstand this. So we actually went out into the garden, which may or may not have been the right thing to do. Everyone says you should hide under a table. But I'm like, I'm not going to sit under a table if the roof's going to collapse on me. So I got out of the building. All of the water in the pool came out. It was like being in one of those movie scenes with in a sea when you had like 20-foot waves, but that was from the pool. No joke. All the water
and
in the
where
pool.
Was you then at that point?
In the garden.
With the pool?
Yeah, next to the pool. So that was a really clever idea.
So you got wet?
Really wet. Like, but Matt, I'm not joking. Like the it was like a 1.5 foot amount of water on the ground because of the pool.
Mate, you could have drowned.
Well, 1.5 foot, maybe a bit of so. It was up to my calves of water from the pool was then on the garden.
Oh, okay, fine, fine. Not the whole amount.
No. But right. The whole building was like moving. Everything's like banging shit. Like, it's so terrifying. And all I knew was it would end. Like, that was all I knew. I knew it would end. And so all in my head, the only concern for me and my family and my girlfriend was anything falling on us, because I think that's the concern.
Yeah,
if something comes down a tree. Or so I just kept shouting, just like, you know, look around. And it must have lasted about 45 seconds, and as I say, probably one of the most terrifying experiences I've ever been in. However, we were all completely fine and completely safe. Nothing fell off,
thank god.
It was incredibly dramatic and terrifying, but there was no damage to the building. There was no. It was just really freaking scary. Unfortunately, what we were feeling was 150 miles away from the epicenter in Lombok, which obviously had this disastrous effects. And obviously, these poor people lost their lives, and the huge numbers were injured, and buildings collapsed. In Bali, it was just terrifying. It wasn't actually anything more than that. I don't think anyone lost their lives or received injuries in Bali. So this was horrific, and I think all of us were completely shaken to the core and really scary. And I would have loved to have said that was it, and it was just a really bizarre experience. Unfortunately, after earthquakes, anyone who's ever done geography, you get aftershocks. And so for the rest of the week that I was there, every 6 hours, there was a magnitude 4 or 5 aftershock.
Was there?
Every 6 hours. And the problem is, now, whilst these are quite minor, there was one major one that was nearly a 6, which we were on the beach, actually, and on the sunbed. And that was quite, and everyone sort of panicked a bit. And that must have lasted maybe 20 seconds and felt quite aggressive. The rest of them were all pretty minor.
But there's nothing that can eat you on the beach. It's just the waves.
No, a coconut. Because right. We were under pumps. But it's just unnerving. But I think the most unnerving thing about it is, will it be as dramatic as the previous one? That big one. Let's call it the magnitude 7, even though it was a 6.9. Because that was so scary, the minute you feel another earthquake, you're thinking, is it going to ramp up to be like that one before? So that's where the terror comes from.
Or more.
Because the other big thing is they don't know if it's a pre-shock. So there had been one a week before, so we didn't know if it was ramping up. Maybe this was all going to lead to a magnitude 9, which are the ones that, you know, you read about in the news that cause these massive tsunamis.
Which is probably what the other place had.
Yeah, thousands and thousands of lives. So we didn't know that. So every time there was a rumble, everyone was on edge. And also, you were always waiting for the next one to come. So it was a really bizarre and unnerving experience. But the weirdest part about it, mate, is the physiological results, or the physiological symptoms that you feel after an earthquake. And I read a lot about this because we were all feeling really like loopy. And because...
A bit lethargic.
Mate, not like seasick.
Ah.
Because your brain and your body can't comprehend something that should always be solid, i.e. the ground, moving. So your body can't fathom it. So you're seasick. You're constantly, you're really lightheaded. You get like phantom shakes.
Really?
So I downloaded, by the way, huge shout out here for an app called Last Quake. They're also on Twitter as, I'm going to get them right because I need to shout them out. These people are an independent sort of earthquake seismology organization. I'm going to try and find them officially. They come under, here we go, EMSC, Independent Scientific Organization and Provider of Real-Time Earthquake Info. These people were incredible in terms of providing information. They have a live app, so the minute you felt a shake, you could go on the app and it would tell you if other people were feeling an earthquake, if there had been one picked up by all the different environmental agencies.
So it was a bit like a map.
Literally a live map. So it was brilliant because you would think things would be shaking, so you could open up the app, and if no one else was feeling it, you knew it'd be phantom. But it took us all a week to, and you get muscle memory. You sit at the table where the first quake happens and you're like, you feel really lightheaded and
weird.
It is so weird. And so for any of you that live out there in sort of earthquake prone territories, I now sympathize with you.
But they must be half used to it though.
They must be.
Yeah, they've got to be.
You know, and obviously the west coast of America, California, is one of the biggest areas for that. But yeah, all of my thoughts, I'm unfortunately not a religious guy, but all of my thoughts are with the people of Lombok and anyone who was affected by it,
because
lot of tourists were affected by it too. It's a part of the world that I spend a lot of time with, very special to me and my family, and so horrible to see that. And you know what's funny? The Balinese are funny kind of people. They celebrate death. I mean, our cook, her mama died, and when we turned up, she goes, oh, I need 3 days off. And we're like, why? She goes, oh, my mom's funeral, like, it's really cool, we're going over to this place, and it's like, then we've got a party over here, and like, it's, and I was like, I'm sorry. She goes, it's great. So like, they celebrate death, like, they're not scared of death. Like, they were all terrified. It's the first time I've seen them terrified. Usually you could say things like, oh, what about the volcano, and they go, oh, no one cares about the volcano, don't worry, you're fine. But for the earthquake, they were all genuinely really scared. So that was unnerving. So yeah, so a really bizarre experience, and one I won't forget anytime soon. And you know what's awful? And I've been reflecting upon this. And again, we've been talking about this way too long. Sorry for anyone who's bored and wants us to talk about cars. I feel like I've had one too many sort of near-death experiences recently. I feel like I've been around a lot of sort of incidents, witnessing life-ending car crashes. I saw a horrific motorbike crash whilst in Indonesia as well. Earthquakes. This awful, awful situation with this bridge in Genoa.
Yeah, for sure.
Which I've driven over more times than I can count any hands. Every single trip where we go from Monaco into Italy, or we go from Italy into Monaco, or vice versa, or anywhere, we use that bridge. It's featured in videos of mine. So all of it is a bit unnerving and a bit weird. I feel a bit like I'm in Final Destination. You know, they're coming after me. I've cheated death and it's coming after me, which is a very ominous plowing to leave this podcast. But yeah, it's been a weird few weeks. It's been a weird few weeks for sure. And that's been my experience. So yeah, that was 10 minutes of waffle about an earthquake.
But you are going to get, like, law of averages, you are going to get stuff like this.
I guess.
Mate, you're always travelling. You're going to see bad accidents and you're always on the road and you're always, you globetrot the world. So you're going to experience these things. Just be safe.
And again, to continue with our deep and meaningful conversation, do you not feel like the world's changing a bit? We've had the heat wave here. We've had earthquakes. We've had, you know...
It's pissing hard now.
It's really pissing hard right now. I was supposed to be filming a vlog today. That's not happening, is it? My review of the Golf R in a monsoon. But yeah, it's all changing. And, you know, who knows what it's going to mean. But we continue. No, should we... We need to find a segue out of this part because it's getting very downhill, very depressing. Let's answer a couple of your questions.
Yeah, let's just cut.
Let's just cut. So I'm not going to end it there because it's way too depressing to end it there. So let's find a couple of questions that we can answer that you guys suggested, because we have been asking for topics.
Question away.
Question away.
Did you not get them ready, mate?
No, I did, and then they failed. Right. So, would we ever do Gumball Rally? So Gumball Rally just happened the other day. Lots of different YouTubers and social media people took place. You've never done Gumball, have you?
I think I've said before previously that sort of trip doesn't appeal to me.
Does nothing for you.
There is one big thing that would really put me off. It's €60,000.
Gumball, and that's this year. I mean, I think it changes every year, but yeah, $60,000.
It's for, not for me. Whoa. That's not for me.
It's the wrong type of crew for me. People who are spending $60,000, I mean, I don't know those people. I can't associate with them.
No.
Nothing in connection with them.
I am I am not rich enough to be spending that money on a trip.
We have no plans. And also, I do Modbull because I love Modbull because it feels more accessible. Best estate for your money. That feels like it needs to be a whole separate podcast in itself. A lot of you know that I recently drove the new C63 estate. I loved that.
You did, yeah.
I know you're going to say the RS6, and so I want to move on.
No, I hear you. So we got the new RS4 at the moment.
RS4 is very nice.
Which is very good.
I've heard amazing things about the E63S.
Yeah, yeah.
So more to come on that at some point.
But there isn't a bad car now, mate. All the new cars, they're all great, aren't they?
But best estate. Estates are coming back. Mm. Front-wheel drive, all-wheel drive, rear-wheel drive? Any preference?
Front-wheel drive or rear-wheel drive?
Rear-wheel drive,
of course.
But I do like a front-wheel drive hot hatch. I have to say.
Yeah.
I like that. I think it's a fun experience. I'm not a big fan of all-wheel drive.
No, but I don't... I instantly think power. So you can't have a load of power for a front-wheel drive engine.
But that's why I like the little hot hatches.
Yeah.
You know, okay, up GTIs and things like that, I think, is a laugh. Okay, interesting question. When buying a car for Auto Trader or Piston Heads or online in general, how can you tell what's a good car, a good deal, and won't break within 20 seconds? You can't until you go and see it, can you?
I would know probably more than others because I'd look at an advert.
What do you look for in an advert then? That's interesting.
It's hard to tell. I would just know.
You would just get a gut feeling.
You just get a gut feeling, yeah, whether it was well presented, the pictures, the advert, the dealer. There's lots of things to take into consideration, but yeah, the only way you're really going to know is go and look.
The rain is getting really hard, isn't it?
It's really hard.
I don't know if you guys can hear it in the background, but it is really lashing down. Right, a couple of more. God, you guys have given us a load of suggestions, but these are all like individual podcasts. What's your favorite sounding car?
Me?
Yeah.
It's got to be a Ferrari of some sort.
There's a really good sounding Ferrari from 2004.
That would be one of them.
360 Challenge Stradale.
Speciale would be up there for me.
Really?
Yeah. I don't think it's the best sounding one,
the Speciale.
But it does make a lovely noise.
It does make a good noise. But
And my Huracan makes good noise as well.
Okay, I agree with you. V10. Huracan or R8. One more. Oh, okay, here you go. What is the next road trip that either of us are doing?
So in about a month from now, I'm doing an Alps trip with Supercar Driver.
Yes, you are.
So
sick.
Really looking forward to that.
What are you taking?
I don't know, to be honest. So the Performante is for sale at the moment.
Oh, okay.
However, there are a lot of them on the market, more than what I'd hoped. So I may just keep that for a while. If I don't sell it by next month, I'll probably keep hold of it, at which point I'll take that. If I sell it, then I'll have to take the Porsche. I don't really want to take the Porsche because it's been busy. I've done a lot of miles in it, so I want to hold off on that a little bit now.
And the AMG?
I will sell that soon as well. Okay. That's nearly at 5,000 miles now. So,
and any plans to replace? Have you got anything that you're eyeing up?
Not imminently. I mean, if I sold the AMG and the Performante, if they both sold, the Porsche is going nowhere.
Okay,
obviously,
sure.
Then I will replace them with something, but I don't know what. At the moment, that's why I'm not that bothered if the Lambo sells or not.
Because okay.
I
don't, there's nothing you're really desperate
not
for.
Not really, and just I'm not going to get an SVJ because I'm not playing the game. No. I'm not getting one. So
thank
for
God.
Everyone that thinks that
thank
I
God.
Was, I'm not.
Well, my next trips, I'm off to Pebble Beach on Monterey Car Week. I don't know when this podcast is going out, but that's my sort of next thing on my agenda, which I can't wait for. The car. Oh, actually, maybe if this goes up. Anyway, I got a cool car for that week. I don't want to say. I won't say anything. Viewers of the main channel may know my friend Phil. Phil the hero who always hosts me ever so beautifully in Monterey.
He's very cool, isn't he?
He's just taking delivery of his McLaren Senna.
Really?
So we'll be checking out Phil's McLaren Senna. That's going to be an interesting video indeed. But lots of other stuff. I love Monterey Car Week. I'm then off on a few other little adventures. There is something so unbelievably exciting happening at the beginning of September in France that I just can't talk about for my own sanity. As and when it happens, you will know about it and we will talk about it. But anyway.
Wait, I don't even know.
No. Because I haven't, I think I have maybe told you, but you don't know.
I've told you, I don't know.
And then I'm off on lots of short little trips. So no major big road trips planned at the moment, but I am looking at taking the 360 somewhere in October. So I don't know where, but somewhere in October I'd like to take the 360.
Croatia.
Croatia's a bit far though, isn't it?
What, your front is going to break.
No, not going to break, but like it's a bit far to go.
You could ask Paul to come in his merchant. So you better go to Catford.
I'm thinking Germany. I love South Germany, Bavaria.
There's some lovely roads
amazing
in Germany
roads.
As well.
So I think that's what I might do with the 360. And yeah, probably we'll get Paul along. We'll have to
be
chop
hilarious.
Our cars.
Hilarious.
Can't you go and buy like a 996 GT3 RS and come with us?
No, I'll come as a support car in a new car.
Not in a new car.
Why?
Get in the mix. Stop being
mate,
so scared.
I am not
modern
buying
classics.
An old car. It's going to break.
996 GT3 RS would be a winner, mate. That is a whip.
996
I want one.
GT3
the one with the funky headlights.
It's manual.
It's the first 3RS.
Yeah, it's manual.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
What?
No, thank you.
You don't like manual cars now?
No. I haven't liked manual cars forever.
Oh my God. I think that's the poignant moment to end today's slightly strange podcast, if I'm honest. We've talked about the end of the world. We've talked about near-death experiences. We've talked about Tony driving on track and the fact he doesn't like manuals.
Anyway, that's some brilliant summary.
Brilliant things. We hope you've enjoyed it. If you're watching us here on YouTube, make sure to subscribe because as we keep teasing, big things are coming for this podcast on YouTube. I promise, I promise, I promise. If you're listening to us though, keep enjoying us audio only. We're on Spotify, we're on SoundCloud, we're on iTunes, we're on various different apps. So just search Behind the Glass on however you listen to your podcasts. Before we go, don't forget Tony, Instagram, Gravelwood Car Sales. Let's get into 50K. Thanks for tuning in. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.